I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. Today we are in the St. Blaise Bishop and Martyr Studio, joined by, I don't even know what I'm saying, try that again.
He wanted to be so cute with the name change that he didn't focus on the podcast. There's something to be thought of there.
That there, always the voice of disgruntled discontent at the start of the podcast, Father Drew Hoffman, the friend and helper of the podcast, actually does work for us, Father Garrett Burns.
That explains why my throat is feeling good today. This is the same Blaze.
I've rejected Blaze and his intercession.
There are going to be so many saints waiting in line to slap you when you show up at the pearly gates.
I stand by it.
I prefer on that day Saints Ansgar. You know, it's the same day.
Yeah.
That is an awesome name.
There we go. That's a name.
I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Ansgar
or something.
Yeah, I think if you say it, it becomes a local law, Bishop.
That is messed up for some of those saints that are on like big saints feast days that they don't. Like, no one ever celebrates Ansgar. They only celebrate Blaise. There's a couple other examples of that that nobody ever celebrates. And
like even the breviary, I'm in the process of switching over to the next day. I'm like, oh yeah, there was also that saint. I never got that far in the office of readings to recognize, oh, there was a second saint I could have
when
done.
When I celebrated, when I was a parish priest years and years ago, I really loved St. Blaise. And I thought, how cool is this? I'm going to give the St. Blaise blessing, you know, and you do it and you do it. Well, after about the 800th time you give it that day, you're kind of tired of St. Blaise.
I need Ansgar.
We're doing Ansgar next year.
Switch over midday. The evening mass is for St. Ansgar. Well, joining us again in the podcast studio, as you have already heard, is Bishop Kemi for episode number 2 with us on About 4 O'Clock. So thank you again for being here, Bishop.
Delighted to be here. It's great.
Well, those who listen regularly to the show know that here we like books. And I know, Bishop, that you are a reader as well. In fact, the last several years, Bishop has given us, Priests of the Diocese, a book each year for Christmas that has been particularly meaningful to him over the previous year. So we would like to know, we're curious to know, Bishop, what are you reading these days?
It's a great question, and I like asking that question even of our seminarians here at the house and of our priests. I find reading, I enjoy it. I also struggle because of the time constraints and not having enough time to read. I marvel at people that read prolifically, you know, that are reading numerous books and finish books, you know, lots of books over a period of time. I'm not a fast reader, but I do enjoy it. So right now I'm reading 2 books. I'm reading Treasure in Clay, which is really the last book that Venerable Fulton Sheen wrote. It's his spiritual, if you will, autobiography. When he was declared venerable a couple of years ago, I thought, well, I haven't read a lot of Fulton Sheen's books, and he wrote 60-some books. So I read The Priest Is Not His Own, which is just a marvelous treatise on priesthood. I'd highly recommend it to all seminarians and all priests. And then now The Treasure in Clay, which is his last words, really, months before he passed away.
I love Treasure in Clay. That's on my shelf of favorite books. Treasures in Clay, it's so good.
Yeah, and, you know, Venerable Fulton Sheen has an extraordinary way of writing. Of course, he was a great communicator, great speaker. And I discovered in his writings that he writes a lot like he spoke. And he kind of builds this crescendo, as he did in his in his TV programs, you know, in a very kind of a dramatic way, you know, and you just almost be like feeling inspired and, you know, you want to go and grab your sword and go forward, you know. Well, he writes like that, at least in the examples that I've been reading. And it's an exciting read, you know. It's a fast read. It's very interesting.
Great stories in it, too. Great stories.
Yeah, I mean, he had an amazing life. I mean, he traveled all over the world with the Society for the Propagation of the Faith and had so many different experiences promoting the missions. He's a former Illinois priest, so as I am. He was from the Diocese of Peoria. I was just south in the Diocese of Springfield in Illinois. So I have that affinity with them. That's the only thing we have in common. And that we're bishops. And the second book I'm reading in this year of the Eucharist, I'm reading a book by Abbot Jeremy Driscoll. It's called What Happens at Mass. Huh. And it is a, it was recommended to me by a cohort of bishops that I meet with regularly. It's a short book, but it takes all the parts of the Mass and it really just develops some great Eucharistic understanding of why we do this at the Mass and what this means. And so I'm reading that and finding really a lot of insights. That was actually a book that I had contemplated maybe giving to the priests and the seminarians this year for the year of the Eucharist. But I decided on another book that I was introduced to. It's called The Mystery of the Altar and its daily meditations on the Eucharist, which I'm finding, I don't know however many else are finding this, but I'm finding that book very helpful in my holy hour, and especially right after celebrating Mass to read a, it's 2 or 3 minute reflection. Mm-hmm. The authors of that book did a tremendous research with the mystics of the church and all the many saints who wrote for centuries on the Eucharist. And so I'm finding that to be very helpful. I'm looking for a good novel to read. I'm not reading a novel currently, but I'm looking for one. I'm kind of any recommendations. I love the classics. Some years ago, I started reading some of the classics. I thought, before I get out of this life, I better read some of the best books that have ever been written. So I was doing an internet search, you know, the best books of all times or something like that. And all these different books came up. And so I've been kind of trying to read some of them, the, you know, Jane Eyre and Wuthering mm-hmm. Heights and Dickens novels and some of the Russian novelists mm-hmm. like Dostoevsky and Leo Tolstoy. I've read Anna Karenina, that, that great epic love story. Anna
That's an
Karenina.
Up and down read.
Yeah, I loved it. I really loved it. I started Moby Dick.
Oof.
But I got about halfway, a little over halfway through, and I got so tired of the whaleology that was in that. And I thought, let's just tell the story, you know, tell the story. So I stopped reading it. I probably take it up and finish it one of these days. But
Barron talks about Moby Dick and how that's one of his 5 favorite books. Bishop
really?
Barron. And he talks about the boring parts. And I don't know if it was Melville. I think it was Melville who explained why that's all in there as a novitiate for his readers. Like the seminarian or like the person in religious life has to go through some years of maybe a little more drudgery in the basics and the hidden aspects of it to make sure they're committed to the more exciting part. He wanted people to make sure that they were committed to the high level stuff.
The little I know about Melville, I don't think him and I would have gotten along. I don't think he's a guy I would have hung out with.
I'm not committed.
That's right. He said that and I was like, okay, I'm definitely not reading Moby Dick. That's just
I mean, it is 800 pages. Oh, I mean, it's crazy. I haven't yet attempted War and Peace, but one of these days I'm going to. Have you ever read it?
Oh, no.
I've not done War and Peace. I've done Moby Dick and Anna Karenina, but not War and Peace.
I love I'm no expert in this, so please don't assume that I am, but I love how Dostoevsky and really Tolstoy too, they really get into the personalities of the characters. I mean, mm-hmm. Crime and Punishment mm-hmm. and Brothers Karamazov. Oh my God.
That was one of my favorites ever. And that was one I had to say, I'm reading 25 pages every day. No more and no less, but every single day, no exceptions to get through it. But the insights into the human person, they know some stuff. They've been through some stuff, those guys have, and so they can speak about some stuff.
I always tell the seminarians that's why they should read the classics. That's what makes them the classics is because of that human insight. That's why those books stick around. Those authors understand the human heart or soul in a way and are able to articulate it in a way that we can't. Another great one for that I love, he's hit and miss for me, but is in Dickens, David Copperfield. It's my favorite work of Dickens of just the people are good, trying to become better, and such great insights as they stumble along that way. That's one of my top faves. Mm-hmm.
Have you read any Graham Greene?
Yes, The Power and the Glory. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he wrote many, many books. Mm-hmm. I've got a few of his books in my personal library, but I can't say I've read a lot of them.
My mom got me his biography, The Unquiet Englishman for Christmas. So that's what I'm reading right now. But he did write an incredible amount of stuff in screenplays and things like that. But Power and the Glory is my favorite book.
Yeah, it's great.
Ever.
It's
End of the Affair is magnificent.
Willa Cather.
She's one of my top 3 authors.
My Antonia.
Love her. Song of the Lark. I just finished that one not too long ago. It was fantastic.
Death Comes to the Archbishop.
Yep.
Is
Death Comes to the Archbishop.
Incredible.
That's a great novel.
Especially since she wasn't Catholic.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
Her insights into things like the Breviary and Liturgy of the Hours without being Catholic are just stunning, really.
Mm-hmm. An English author that I've been drawn to is E.M. Forster. Mm-hmm. He wrote Passage to India.
Okay.
Kind of a classic. And he also, Room with a View. And
I've heard of that.
And I forget who wrote Howard's End. It might have been him. But that's another classic that I would recommend. It's a very, very intriguing story. So Howard's End. So.
My experience of reading is that it just helps preaching a ton. It helps Definitely. Whether you preach about the thing or not, or mention it, because sometimes that's not helpful. But it gives that insights to the human persons that then helps when you are, as a priest, insights, on a daily basis, having to express things in a relatable way.
Insights and the rhythm of language. I mean, it's part of the rhetoric. You imbibe that when you read those classic works, because those authors know the musicality. Obviously, I don't know the musicality of the English language, and they can bring that forward. And subconsciously, I think you take that in when you read it, and it helps with preaching.
In another podcast I heard, you might have said, Father Drew, Louis Duval.
Duval. Have you read any Louis Duval?
I have not, but I actually, after that podcast, I did an internet search, and he writes on all these saints.
I'd really encourage, a lot of the young priests especially love The Quiet Light, which is the Aquinas one. We've read Set All Afire.
I've never heard of him before.
Spear is great. What did I just finish? Lay Siege to Heaven, Catherine
Siena.
But it's
like historical fiction.
It's historical fiction, but well-researched, obviously speaking in kind of the tongue of the saint would. But that'd be worth looking into.
I know you recommend Jacques Philippe. I've heard of him. I've never read any of his things. So I'm going to take him up. Father Garrett, what are you reading?
Yeah, I just finished A Severe Mercy by Sheldon Van Auken. I don't know if you've ever
I've heard a lot of people talking about that, but I've not read it.
Yeah, so he calls it a memoir of love. So it's basically the story of he and his wife. It just kind of begins and hear that she is dying. And then he goes and tells the story of their love, and he begins and talks about it as their pagan love because they weren't yet Christian. Then through this experience and ultimately meeting C.S. Lewis at Oxford and their relationship, they become Christians. And he talks about how the death of his wife was a severe mercy because it elevated their love for each other into a love in Christ. And so it's been what you were talking about, Drew, very helpful in just funerals or people grieving to kind of speak around that in that way. And yeah, it's a beautiful book. So
I heard also in a former podcast, you're reading Shoes of the Fisherman.
I finished
it. Are you in it? Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Morris West. So that was a book a year. That's an old, old novel. And that was made into a motion picture when I was a high schooler in the 60s, you know, and 70s. And of course, as a seminarian, we loved watching Shoes of the Fisherman because it was the pageantry of the Vatican and the conclave and all that sort of thing. When you were mentioning that, I said, man, that goes way back. You know?
This is one of the last quotes. I wrote it down in my notes app and I use it all the time. If a man is centered upon himself, the smallest risk is too great for him because both success and failure can destroy him. If he is centered upon God, no risk is too great because success is already guaranteed. The successful union of creator and creature beside which everything else is meaningless. I've prayed about that a ton
That's good.
Lately because I hadn't finished that when we talked about the first one, but excellent.
A book that I remember reading as probably a college seminarian, and it was made also into a motion picture. It's kind of a Catholic fiction type of thing. It was a book by the name of Rumor Godden, and it's a woman. She wrote In This House of Breed, and B-R-E-D-E. It was a story about a woman who entered into this Benedictine monastery in England. And it's a fascinating novel. It's a great novel.
So. I've heard the title. I've never read it, but yeah,
In This House of Breed.
Are you on anything new, Father Drew?
That Graham Greene
novel
is kind of my recliner. I always have a recliner book that's next to my recliner. And then my Holy Hour confessional book is The Book of Pastoral Care by Gregory the Great. My
classic
focus missionaries, Austin, gave that to me because he knows I love Gregory the Great, which is just... Yeah, it's just wonderful to read. I preached about one of the lines from it that I read in the morning yesterday, which basically was like, spouses often think about how hard it is to deal with their spouse instead of how hard it must be for their spouse to deal with them. And I really thought about that. Like, I think about that all the time. We've talked about that a little bit. It's like, I'm hard to deal with. I realize that. And I often think about how exhausting it is to deal with A, B, and C. but I'm probably pretty tough for people to deal with too. And that was worth praying about yesterday.
I think that's a great idea for any associate to keep in mind.
Yeah, that's so true. And you learn that as you get older as a priest. Right. Like, yeah, oh man, that's kind of a tool.
Well, I started reading, I'm doing a reread of Pastoris Dabis Vobis, which is good. Then for my kind of fun book, I'm reading Ron Chernoff's George Washington, A Life. It's a big biography on him, which I am really enjoying, but also usually makes me the most boring person in the room. I'm like, you want to hear George Washington facts? This is just what I've learned about. So like every dinner conversation, someone will say something and somehow I'll relate it to a George Washington. Because, you know, I grew up with him as kind of a mythologized figure, as pretty one-dimensional, but he's actually a fascinating man, you know, a man of one of the best horsemen of his days, a man of immense physical strength. Like, people remember how strong physically he was. Him and Martha had a much more amorous relationship than we would often think of in junior high history classes. So he's just a fascinating and a virtuous man too. It's really cool to see the ways in which he practiced charity. That was a big piece of his life. Even when he was president, he would take the leftovers from the White House and send them over to feed prisoners at a prisoner for those who were in there for debt, because he really worried about them. He paid for other people to go to school because he believed in education. So his friends' kids, if they couldn't afford to send them to college, he would do those sorts of things. He had a standing rule at Mount Vernon that no one got turned away hungry. Any beggar that showed up, they would feed. And they have ledgers of these people that they would feed.
Was he a deeply religious man?
More so than I realized. I always was kind of told he was kind of a deist. Mm-hmm. That seems like that comes from Thomas Jefferson, according to Ron Chernoff, but that he was a fairly deep believer, but he felt it was wrong to politicize it. And so he was very quiet about his charitable works. Certainly Martha was they were Episcopalian, very deeply. She started every morning with scripture reading by herself, and he would start the mornings with prayer as well. But he definitely practiced a life of virtue in significant ways. As I've been reading about it, one of the things interesting too, I've even got to him being president. Prior to that, he was a man who wore many hats, and at different stages in his life, he had to change, and he went from a surveyor to military to a planter to a representative. And so just always changing in these roles. And that's one of the aspects really of priestly life. Oftentimes we are called regularly to change hats. Sometimes we think we're ready for it. Sometimes it comes as a surprise. We don't think we're ready for it, but we have to have that, as we talked about last time, a docility of spirit, a flexibility to be able to move from assignment to assignment at times. And that's one of the real struggles in priesthood at times, one of the real hardships. When a man applies for seminary, they've got a long questionnaire they've got to fill out. And one of the questions on there is, what causes you worry about the possibility of serving as a diocesan priest? And that's one of the common answers that comes out. Guys will talk about, I'm afraid of when I have to move assignments, or I'm afraid of having to leave friends and people I know in the parish and start over again. And that's for many guys an understandably scary thought. Now, all of us have been through a few assignment changes. Father Garrett, you're on your second assignment, right? So it was cathedral, and now you're at St. Margaret Mary. Father Drew, you're just starting your third assignment, cathedral chaplain at St. Isidore's up at K-State and now at WSU St. Paul's. Bishop, you have had many assignments.
That's because I'm old.
I wasn't going to say that.
Yeah, I've moved eight times in my priesthood and now episcopacy from the time I went to my first assignment till I moved here. So eight times. Yeah, it's daunting, it's challenging, it's not always pleasant. Moving, though, I would say I've learned is part and parcel of our life as priests, as diocesan priests particularly. We don't take a vow of stability. I think we should enter into the diocesan ministry with the idea that we're not ordained for one particular parish or one particular assignment. We're ordained for a diocesan church. And so in the context of a full life as a priest, it's more than likely and almost guaranteed that we're going to be moving from time to time to different places and serving different communities and different people. And I didn't realize, I mean, I kind of knew that intellectually when I first started, but I didn't really have a sense emotionally what that would be like, or even spiritually, until you go through it. You know, it's like everything, you know, once you experience it, you know, it's like a great teacher. It has something to teach you. I've reflected a lot about the various moves I've made. And, you know, I've been sad at each move. In some moves, I've even cried like a baby when you're driving out of the place or, you know, you do that last mass and, you know, and everybody's, oh, we're so sorry to see you go and wish you could stay. And of course, humanly speaking, you wish you could stay too. But you go on and, you know, there's something else waiting for you, some other people waiting for you. I can't emphasize this enough. I feel like I made that kind of promise in my own heart that I would do whatever the bishop asked me to do. And I never really chose any of my assignments. They were chosen for me and I agreed to it, you know, when the bishop proposes, I would say, that's something I think I can do. The biggest transition, though, of course, was moving from my home diocese, which I never anticipated having to do, coming to a whole different part of the country and to another diocese, another state, never been here before. I didn't know anything about the Diocese of Wichita other than what I had heard. And those things were very positive. So it was really monumental for me to make this transition, you know, at the age of 54, thinking all my family, but my parents and my brothers and sister and nieces and nephews and all my extended families back in Illinois. And then to move to a different part of the country, 8 hours away, and then to come into a whole new ministry, you know, as it turned me inside out for a while. And I remember the first months I was here, I would just like, what am I doing here? Why am I here? You know? And then gradually, you know, things begin to take shape and you feel more comfortable and, you know, and now, you know, of course I'm here almost 8 years, but it is really, it has become home, you know, and I hope it's yours too, is that I would end my days here, but I can't guarantee that, you know, the Lord's in charge, you know, and again, I would have to say, you know, I made a kind of a promise to myself that I would always do what the church asked me to do. When you kind of go in with that spirit, there's blessings to that. Even though you can't see them or you can't, you have to trust that. Mm-hmm. And I just think in each of my assignments, I have made friends that will be friends my whole life. But I wouldn't have made if I hadn't said yes. Mm. You know.
Yep.
And I'm sure even in the years you've been a priest, these few years you've all been a priest, you've already experienced that. And there's more of that to come.
Yeah, how small my life would be if I got to choose my assignments. How small it would be if I got to like pick from a list or veto some of the things that you presented. Like when you, I don't know how it worked with yours, Garrett, or with yours, Chad, but when I was ordained, we just got around a conference table afterward at the back of Church of the Magdalene, and you kind of like slid envelopes across the tables to
us. That's my fun part. I love it.
You gotta have a little fun with it.
So honestly, like, it should have been videotaped as like a reality TV show, and then we open it, and mine says cathedral, and if I had just been able to say, no, Bishop, maybe toss me something else. Not that I had no thoughts of that, but if that was an option, there would have been a real poverty in my priesthood for not having been presented with the things that I got to learn and been blessed with at the cathedral.
Yeah. I remember my first assigned move. I'd been an associate pastor and chaplain in Pittsburgh, Kansas, Our Lady of Lourdes, St. Mary's Colgan High School, and loved it. Loved it. Was there for 4 years. I steeled myself for the mass announcing that I was leaving. I knew it was going to be a little bit hard. I prepared for myself. I went through it. I was out at the gathering space after mass. I thought I was doing really good. And the first one that runs out was this fifth grade boy. And he's just bawling and so upset. And at that point, my wall just came down and melted. And I'm sad too, Asher. And yet I went on to Coffeyville, where I was pastor there for 3 years. And I love that. It's one of those things. People kind of want to ask them, well, what's your favorite assignment? And it doesn't really work that way. Each place brings its own blessings, its own graces. And in that moment, in that time, I love it and I don't want to leave it. But the Lord, in his graciousness, when I move on to the next one, fills that spot again. And like you said, Bishop, I bring those friends along. And I still have friends from all my previous assignments that I'm in contact with regularly, that keep in touch with and I see. And there in Wichita, I get coffee with.
You know, when I was ordained a bishop here on May 1st, 2014, there were people in that cathedral from my very first assignment.
Wow. That's great.
That was amazing.
That's moving.
See.
Yeah.
I remember the bus.
Yeah.
There was an Illinois bus, right? Yeah,
that was my whole family.
I remember it being pretty rowdy, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Cans started falling out of the bus when the door opened. Yeah,
it was a big deal to come to Wichita for the Cummins, you know. Extended family, they hired this bus, and they all came, and they had a blast. They just had a blast. People still talk about it.
You know? There's, like, obedience, in my experience, it also gives you someone to blame. And I don't mean that in like a, I don't mean that in like a negative sense, but okay, I didn't choose this assignment. So who do I blame? Bishop, but the Holy Spirit is who is working in your making assignments. Okay. And then all of a sudden I'm here then for a reason. I am here for an expectation. The Spirit is moving and working in ways that are much bigger and greater than me. If you choose your own things, there's not as much to fall back on, if anything, when times get tough. And so it's so freeing. Obedience is so freeing.
Absolutely.
As strange as it feels. I don't know if that's been your experience, Bishop, but certainly ours.
Yes, absolutely. It is freeing. And it's one of the things I just wanted to say, the appointment of priests is one of my most important things I do. It's also one of the most challenging, but because we have 120 priests and every parish is different, every priest is unique. And then putting guys where you think or others help me make those kind of discernments. And with the priests themselves, because you all get a clergy form every year and you can write your thoughts about how things are going or what might be next for you. I take all that to heart. But making these assignments is really time consuming. And I want people to know it's not like an arbitrary moving chess pieces on the board. And it's just like, well, I'll just move this guy here and this guy here or whatever. There's really a lot of thought and prayer that goes into that, and more prayer now than ever before. When I first came here, of course, I didn't know the priests. That was difficult. And so collaborating with people in leadership to kind of help me make the best decisions about that. I want our priests to know that that is not just a whim. There's some real thought that goes into this. And that, I believe, is the working of the Holy Spirit in all this.
I do not envy you guys that task, because it is so important and it is difficult. And I always try and make a point in that season to offer some prayers for you and your staff in doing that, because it is hard.
And you realize you're dealing with people's lives.
Yeah.
Not just the priests, but you're dealing also with the people of God. And they become very comfortable, attached in many ways to their parish priests. And then so, you know, moving a guy is quite disruptive. And there's challenges to all that, of course, humanly speaking. But as you all said, there's a spiritual dimension to this that reminds me, reminds us that we're really missionaries. You know, Jesus sent them out two by two. And they went from town to town, you know. Nobody planted their feet in a place permanently.
Yeah.
They were all on the move. And diocesan priests are very much like that.
I think for us, it certainly emphasizes and teaches the virtue of abandonment to the Lord, kind of like what you were talking about, Drew. But I think one could hope that that same spiritual truth and lesson could be learned for the people of God as well. Just as we have to move aside, we have to trust that he's going to provide for us. As they're going through the mourning process of losing a pastor they love and bringing a new one, they're also called to work towards that virtue of abandonment to God, of Lord, you're going to provide for our needs. We love this person. We know they're really good. We're sad to see them go. But Lord, we know you're behind all of this and that you're going to still provide for our needs. So I think on both sides of the altar, it calls forth that need for abandonment to the Lord.
That's what Garrett had to go through when I moved out of the cathedral. Like, how can this be the Lord's will?
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word mourning.
However, did you survive?
Yes.
I mean, who made you pizza with Doritos in between the microwave?
He texted me a few weeks after I left, and he's like, I made nachos today, meaning I just put tortilla chips and a bunch of cheddar cheese in the microwave for 30 seconds. So you've taught me well. Or something
well like that's, that. That's my version of nachos.
That's how I eat. That's what
XOXO.
Yeah. I think that just saying yes, like you're saying, the people or us, something we go back to a ton on this podcast is, I mean, that is discernment, is ultimately just saying yes to what God has decided and chosen you for. And that goes into assignments and all of that. And I go back a lot to someone we referenced, Jacques Philippe, and he was in town one time giving a talk. I think it was at Blessed Sacrament. So he was probably maybe doing mass at 8, and a family invited him over for breakfast before that. So he would have to wake up earlier and all this stuff. And he came, he went to their house and they said to him, I'm kind of surprised you said yes to come over and do this. And he said, I said yes to Jesus a long time ago. And after that, I just stopped saying no. And just imagine that's a small instance, right, of that magnanimity, the bigness of soul and of his life that came about because of that. Because when he is able to see that God is inviting me to something, I say yes every single time. That's just a fun life. If you just let God say, I want to show you these people and put you with them, then trying to create it myself, yeah. Like you said, Drew.
If I had stayed in my first assignment, I mean, I loved it and I love the people, but my life would be so boring.
Yep.
You know, mm-hmm. I've been so enriched by just going to various different places and meeting new people and all the new challenges. It also helps develop your own vocation and your ability to serve. You can't imagine the new insights you'll have just because of different places you'll be and different challenges you'll experience. So it's all for the good, even though it is humanly kind of challenging.
I was at lunch with Father Pat York one time, as would often happen in seminary, just frustrated and flustered about something and complaining about something. And he could tell, usually I had words, but he could tell he was a little flustered too. And he just like took a deep breath and he said, Drew, in my experience, when you say yes to the Lord, things work out. And as simple and basic as that is, that's been like, that was 10 years ago. I think about it all the time still to this day. And yep. That's been like a defining truth of all of our lives.
Definitely.
Well, Bishop, we are glad that you said yes to coming to the diocese. We're also glad you said yes to joining us on the podcast for last episode and this episode. So thank you once again for being with us today.
I enjoyed it very much.
Thanks also to all of our listeners out there for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. Bishop, would you once again close us with a quote from the saint?
Yes, I would love to. So one of my favorite saints is Mother Teresa of Calcutta, St. Teresa of Calcutta. 3 years ago, I visited her tomb in Calcutta, India, and prayed a long time there, offered Mass at her tomb. I never had the opportunity to meet her in person, but I've always found her so inspiring. And so she said many, many, many things. But the one thing, and many of her sayings were very simple and yet very, very profound. She said, "Peace begins with a smile." We should never underestimate the power of the human smile to change the feelings that we're in and people in our lives. So let's learn how to smile more often and allow the joy of the Lord to communicate through us.
Thank you, Bishop. And we will see you next week.